Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Well, good morning again. There's an old joke that Unitarian Universalists would sing their hymns better if they would stop looking ahead to see if they agree with the words. And I caught myself doing that earlier in the service. So it goes to show you can take the kid out of a UU church, but you can't quite take the UU out of the kid. So good morning again. It's great to be with you. In this time of ours, when the white supremacy, the sexual and economic exploitation, the religious chauvinism and xenophobia of this country are sharpened and explicit, I think lots of religious people are asking questions about what faithful resistance looks like. And I think I am not alone in reflecting on other periods of history when the questions have been similar. The religious language we use when talking about something like doubt might help us or might hurt us in our search for active, faithful ways to love our neighbor. The way we approach our doubting might help us or hurt us in our search for active and faithful resistance. That means going back. It means looking at different kinds of contexts and different kinds of thinking. But I hope you will hang in there with me this morning, because I think that Dietrich Bonhoeffer gives us a possible model for our own thought and action. The details of Bonhoeffer's life are dramatic and fascinating. He was a theological prodigy, a Lutheran pastor, the first public Christian voice of resistance to Nazi policy against the Jews, a participant, reluctantly, in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler, and eventually, in the closing days of the war, a martyr, tortured and executed by the Nazis. Bonhoeffer was a leader in the Confessing Church, the semi-underground movement of those who placed their loyalty to Jesus Christ above their loyalty to the Nazi regime, at a time when the majority of German churches had signed on as part of the Reichskirche, the German state church, which agreed to concentrate on preaching the forgiveness of individual sins, the racial superiority of Aryans, and the political supremacy of the Nazis. Bonhoeffer is revered as a martyr who knew the cost of his actions and chose to resist even though it would cost him his life. It was in this context that Bonhoeffer wrote a book, first published in 1937, called Discipleship. It begins with these words: "Cheap grace is the mortal enemy of our church. Our struggle today is for costly grace." And I think that Bonhoeffer, thinking his way through the importance of costly grace, the kind of grace that animated his resistance to the Nazis, can help us have a healthier relationship with doubt. You don't have to find that language helpful, that language of grace. But I wonder what we can learn from Bonhoeffer, even if his language isn't ours. For Bonhoeffer and for his opponents, for Christian universalists, for Christians in general, grace is what God extends to human beings freely, simply out of love, to deliver human beings from bad things. There is no buying it with money, or at least there's not supposed to be. There is nothing we can or must do to obtain it. It just is. Now again, maybe that language of grace doesn't do anything for you. That's fine. This is Bonhoeffer's language. It doesn't have to be yours. The point is just that Christians of many kinds have argued for millennia about the details. But most all of them, all of us, agree that grace is God's free gift that transforms things from being wrong in the world to right in the world. Amidst news of violence and suffering, grace is the good news. But as Bonhoeffer observed what was going on in Germany in the 1930s, he began to reflect a little bit on what kind of grace was really being preached and practiced. On what agenda and whose agenda it served. Cheap grace is the mortal enemy of our church, he wrote. Our struggle today is for costly grace. These words of Bonhoeffer's are aimed right at the Reichskirche, at the state church. Cheap grace was the kind of grace that forgives sin, but doesn't demand anything. Cheap grace, the kind preached by the state church, proclaimed the availability of God's love, the forgiveness of sin, but not following Jesus in proclaiming good news to the poor, the captive, and the outcast. Cheap grace is bank bailouts, infinite mulligans. It is insisting on forgiveness for sexual assaulters, but not on their repentance or making amends. It's easy to like. It makes no demands. It is, as Bonhoeffer writes, the kind of grace we bestow on ourselves. It is being saved, but not changed. If that kind of grace seems like a problem, well, it was a problem for Bonhoeffer too. Because this kind of grace, this kind of forgiveness may seem free, but someone bears its cost. Those who I hurt or harm, those who are on the receiving end of my selfishness or failure to listen, those from whom I steal or with whom I fail to share, they pay the cost of my free grace. This was true in Bonhoeffer's time when Jews, gay people, Roma, and others paid the price for the kind of grace the state churches preached. It's not that Bonhoeffer thought we had to do things for God to love us. God's love came regardless. But that kind of grace, that kind of love, would transform us if it was working properly. It was, for Bonhoeffer, one and the same call that put us in right relationship with the divine and pushed us toward right relationship with one another. Costly grace, real grace, for Bonhoeffer as a Christian, was the kind that called people forth into the life of Jesus, which was a life of peace and reassurance, and also led to being executed by the Romans on a cross. For Bonhoeffer, it was one and the same voice that proclaimed forgiveness and that drew him to risk and lose his life working against the Nazis. Bonhoeffer writes that costly grace is costly because it costs people their lives. It is grace because it thereby makes them live. Maybe that language, this talk of sin and grace, isn't your language. That's fine. I'm not asking you to adopt those terms. I don't mind, in other words, if you doubt me or if you doubt Bonhoeffer. But I wonder how this distinction between cheap and costly grace can help us in thinking about doubt. In my UU church growing up, I was raised to prize my doubt. Doubt was supposed to purify, to get rid of what is false. Doubt is supposed to make us better, to get us closer and closer and closer to the truth. It's a theological version of the scientific method. Just as Einstein's doubting Newton got physics closer to the truth, doubt was part of a process, a reliable process, of figuring out what is true. And that process, at least, was beyond doubt. Doubt, in other words, operated a little bit like grace. It saved and it clarified. It got us in right relation. Whatever it means for things to go from being wrong in the world to things being right in the world, for religious liberals, doubt seems to be a part of it. So this is the question I want to reflect on together. This is where I think Bonhoeffer's questions can help us. Do we have cheap or costly doubt? Do we have cheap or costly doubt? What demands, after all, do our doubts make on us? What costs do they impose? I remember growing up in a UU church finding it easy to disbelieve in the saving power of Jesus or the healing power of the Spirit because I had nothing at stake in whether those things were true. It's easy to think that the Jews never came out of Egypt, that the Quran is just a book, that Santeria or witchcraft is just superstition. It's easy to doubt all of those things if you already don't believe them, if it costs you nothing to doubt them. If you don't believe those things, then doubting them changes nothing. This, I think, is cheap doubt. These are all cheap doubts I myself have had. This kind of doubt freed me from doing things I didn't want to do and required nothing of me. It seemed to have no cost. But it did. Because some people and some beliefs get challenged more. Women's stories of sexual assault, refugees' stories of their flight for survival, people of color when they account for the racism they experience, differently abled people's straightforward accounting of what it is they need. And there is a subtler kind of doubt that is based in our assumptions about whose voices are reliable. Maybe we believe people who are raising money for charity, but are suspicious of how homeless folks will use the money we give them. Maybe we explain away the prayers of voodoo practitioners to their ancestors as a backwards result of cultural background, but educated white people's atheism is just logic and not culture. Maybe we say that Black Lives Matter, but our newspaper of record takes police reports as fact. Cheap doubt externalizes the burden of doubt to other people. Cheap doubt doesn't mind the uncertainty, tension, and angst that it creates in other people's lives. Cheap grace leaves me saved, but the same. Cheap doubt leaves us correct, but unchanged. So, what would costly doubt look like? What kind of doubt would, as Bonhoeffer said of grace, cost us our lives, but thereby make us live? Well, for Bonhoeffer, costly grace was particular. It was not a general principle of forgiveness, but something that was asked, particular to the challenges of his time and his place, to the circumstances he was in. And for us, I think costly doubt is also particular to the time and place and circumstances we find ourselves in. If cheap grace was the kind that people bestowed on themselves, costly grace was the kind extended to them by the reality of a violent and painful world. if cheap doubt, if my cheap doubts were the ones I bestowed on myself, then costly doubt is the kind we inherit from the violence and pain in our world. Costly grace at work in a time and place when the Nazi regime was murdering millions required drastic action on Bonhoeffer's part. Costly doubt at work in our time and place is what we are forced to question when we pay close attention to the places in our world where people suffer and die, at borders and detention camps, at prisons, and even in homes. When we pay attention to everything in the world and in ourselves that makes those places possible. Costly doubt, in other words, shouldn't just be a nice hobby or, like it was for me growing up, proof that I was smart. Sometimes our doubt is an understandable reaction to the ways in which certain beliefs have been harmful. But costly doubt is something more even than that. It's what we simply can't avoid when we pay attention to the world and its suffering. In this country, with its particular history, in this particular time and place, costly doubt means doubting specifically the things that white and male and straight and cisgender supremacy have taught us are fundamentally true. That is our time and place, our history, and our circumstance. Costly doubt is aimed first and foremost at the things in ourselves and our communities that seem least open to question. Above all, I think, the ways in which white and male and straight supremacy structure our institutions and even our perception of the world. Costly doubt calls into question the things that I think are just me, things I might want to hold on to, the things I like about myself and that I think can't possibly be shaped by white supremacy or other kinds of domination. This is not a call to doubt our own experiences, to be gaslit, to be told that your experiences of harm and hurt aren't real. It's a call to prioritize those experiences, yours and other people's, above a general principle of doubting. Doubt that is always about other people is cheap doubt, but the doubt that you're somehow always on the receiving end of is cheap doubt too. Whether we are the doubted or the doubting, the point is not to replace doubt with faith, but to be careful what work our doubt is doing. To ask, as Bonhoeffer did, what agenda, whose agenda it serves. Cheap grace and cheap doubt are tidy, scientific, and able to be controlled. Costly grace is the kind of grace that sent Bonhoeffer on a path toward the gallows. Even if costly doubt doesn't lead us there, it requires sacrificing things all the same. I confess that I do not quite know what of me is left if whiteness, maleness, straightness are called into question. This kind of doubt is less of a handy tool for finding truth and more of an existential challenge. It is the kind of doubt that flirts with deep uncertainty, with not knowing the best way forward, with not always knowing if a way forward exists. It risks throwing us into chaos, but it also throws us into the world. And when it does, we are forced to reckon with whether the things we think are beautiful and true and good may actually cause harm. Not the doubt we bestow on ourselves, not a general principle of doubting, but doubt of the things that we cannot help but doubt if we are immersed deeply in the world. The test of our doubts is not whether they make us correct, but whether they help us to love other people. That is costly doubt. That is, in fact, a little bit like costly grace. And it is the doubt that brings new life. May it be so. Amen.